Welcome to the Jeff Knows Inc. Entrepreneurial Podcast with your host, Jeff Lopes. Jeff has over two decades experience as a serial entrepreneur, building brands like Kimuraware from his home basement to a multi-million dollar global brand that has sold over a quarter million pairs of boxing gloves. Jeff's here to educate, guide, and drive you on the process of bringing your ideas and dreams to reality with the inspiring stories from some of the top business minds.
Welcome to episode number 109 of the Jeff Knows Inc. podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Lopes. Super excited to have on today, from college football quarterback to prison to now changing the world one coffee bean at a time, keynote speaker, author, Damon West. Sit back, everyone, and enjoy. We are live. We are live on the Jeff Knows Inc. podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Lopes. We had a little miscommunication here. Recording didn't happen. We're going to get through this right now with a good friend of ours up in front of us, Damon West. How are you, brother?
Hey, I'm well, man. I'm well. That's okay, man. Things happen like that all the time, Jeff. I'm glad you're recording now. And thank you for having me in Canada. This is the only way I can go to Canada, by the way, virtually, because I cannot go physically. But we'll get into that in a little bit, right?
Yeah, 100%. So let's get back to your college days. Instead of going through your childhood, let's go through your college days, where your injury, let's get to that part of your story, because Damon's got such an incredible story. He went from a star athlete from high school to college to incarceration with substance abuse, but now he's changing the world as a philanthropist, as a keynote speaker, as an author. So many layers of this story, and I want to get through them as quick as we can to get as much value as we can to our audience. Let's get through our college time.
Look, when I was in college, I really only cared about two things. It was partying in my fraternity and being the starting quarterback in college for my Division I college football team. And I did both really well. But life has a way of giving you these days that I call fork in the road days, Jeff. And fork in the roads are days that life's going to knock you down hard. And when you get back up and dust yourself off, the world looks different. Things are in different places. You got hit so hard. But you've got a choice to make. You're going to make the right choice, go the right way, the wrong choice, and go the wrong direction. And I hit my fork in the road on September 21st, 96 against Texas A&M. I got injured that day and my college football career was over. And at that fork in the road in life, I started putting in the hardcore drugs. I went from just drinking a little beer, smoking a little pot, to doing cocaine, ecstasy pills, whatever it was that could take me out of being Damon West without being the football player, because I attached my identity into being an athlete and I didn't like who I was anymore. And I didn't want to be who I was. And drugs took me away from that. That's why a lot of people would get into to substance abuse, because they're coping with something else they're dealing with. I tell people all the time, Jeff, that people that are addicts, I'm an addict. Today, I've got a program of recovery. I'm in a 12-step program. I'll be in it for the rest of my life. I'll never graduate. But people that are addicts, drugs, alcohol, whatever the addiction is, that's not the problem. That's a symptom of the problem. What they're dealing with is something else that's going on in their life, and they put that in. They put the chemicals in to change the way they feel because they don't like being who they are. And that's where I was in college.
So your injury, you said you had your dislocated your shoulder. Wasn't that something you could have rehabilitated or a surgery and try to make a second run at it? Or was that bad of an injury?
No, it's something that I actually rehabilitated and I got back into the rotation after the season. It ended my season and I got back in the offseason and started trying to get the starting job back. But then I had a second injury. I severed my Achilles tendon.
Oh, wow.
An accident at home. And that was a career-ending injury. That was it. That was game, set, match. So, after that game against Texas A&M, I never took a snap in college football in a game again. And my identity was wrapped up in that. I made the comeback to try to get back on the team. And when I cut my Achilles in half, it took the wind out of myself. It knocked me off my feet. And, I had never dealt with loss before like that. I've never been dealt a loss. I've always been able to compete and fight because that's what I've always been as a competitor. But that was it, and I gave up after I cut my Achilles in half. Well, life.
Where was your parents through this all? Because obviously you had a great – we talked prior. You had a great childhood. You had very strong parents of both parents that have been married, you said, for 53 years, which is congratulations on that. Amazing. Yeah. Where were your presence of your parents when you're done with college? You when I'm saying college football, and obviously you're going through, I'm assuming, a depression at that point or some kind of – something was going on with you. Was anybody aware of that? Was anybody Was anybody in that space with you kind of trying to help you through that, or were you on the all alone on that moment?
I mean, my parents were 6 hours away. Texas is a pretty big state.
Oh, okay. So yeah.
Yeah, they were 6 hours away. I mean, they knew I was dealing with something. But I mean, look, I'm 6 hours away. I'm in college. I'm not exactly opening up to them about what's going on in my life. So you know, I think people for the most part, Jeff, and this is a dangerous thing, people suffer in silence. They don't ask for help. The three hardest words I've learned for human beings to say are, I need help. And I wasn't willing to say, I need help back then in college. So my parents didn't fully understand what was going on inside of me because I wasn't allowing anybody inside. I was angry. I was mad at the world.
I think it's very powerful you said that. And it's something that I was actually hoping you're going to go there with that, because it's something that a lot of people need to hear. What is your advice for somebody, a young athlete, because you went through that, and what you went through is something that happens on a regular basis. Like we talked about it. You stick your identity to that sport, whether it's football, hockey, baseball, whatever it is, and you're hoping to get to the next level and something happens, whether you're cut from the team or you had an injury. What is your mindset and what advice would you give somebody that's going through that struggle of breaking through that identity and don't know how to do it?
Yeah, I caution people all the time. I talk to college football athletes all the time, and college athletes, period. Don't wrap your identity up in this stuff. It's important, but it's not who you are. And whenever you find a program or a coach that makes football, let's just go with football for this example. A coach that makes football the end-all, be-all of why you're at school, that's not a good coach, because you're there at that university with that coach and that team at that time to become a better man. If we're talking about a male sport, become a better man, to learn how to become a servant leader, to become a better person one day. And these are all things that we can learn through sports. Sports is a medium for that. The reality is your career is going to be over. Most people's career is going to be over at the end of college if they got into college to play football. Most people don't go pro. Most people don't even get to go to college and continue their football career. So I encourage young people to find out what it is that you're passionate about in life. Find ways that you enjoy serving other people, servant leadership. This is one of the things that I wish I'd have put my focus in, because I had such a drive to succeed at football, but I've never had a drive to succeed at life and being a servant leader. I have that today, but I had to go through a lot to get here.
So with the drug abuse, when did it actually elevate to the next level where you were like, okay, this is getting somewhat out of control? What year was it? How old were you?
So, 2004, I was back in Dallas training to be a stockbroker with UBS, one of these banks in the world. And another broker introduced me to methamphetamine one day. And meth was the one drug. I tell people all the time, man, meth is the most evil, most destructive, most addictive thing I've ever touched in my life. And this stuff is made in a lab. It's made to get you hooked. And it got me. And man, I gave everything away for the drug. And that's what addicts do, Jeff. We give everything away. No one steals anything from an addict. I mean, you want my job, you want my car, you want my home, you can have it. And that's it. Because I'm an addict. And all I care about is getting high. Addicts have a three-part thought process. We have a thought. Let's say the thought is getting high or using or drinking. We obsess over that thought. And then eventually we make that become physical. We put it in. We think, we obsess, it becomes physical. That's the mindset of an addict. And that was me back then. All I cared about was putting in and getting more drugs. And, you know, meth is one of those drugs that you give everything away for it. I was homeless within a year of the first time I tried meth and living on the streets of Dallas. Went from working on Wall Street to living on the streets. And it was one day, whenever I was in the middle of all the crime, because I started committing crimes to fund my addiction, you know, breaking into storage units, breaking into cars, and eventually breaking into people's homes, home burglaries. And I went into people's homes without their permission. I didn't just steal property, Jeff. I stole people's sense of security. I was a bad guy. And it was one of these days I remember scrolling through my cell phone at the time that I had, and I'm looking at my phone and I'm looking at the phone book in my phone, the contact list, and I'm thinking to myself, damn, dude, you had, you know, senators, congressmen, bankers, lawyers, doctors, pillars of society were in my phone at one time, and I had access to that world. And now my phone is full of drug dealers, hustlers, criminals, thieves, all these prostitutes. I mean, just all kinds of different stuff that it, you see these people in the drug world, they're all in your phone. And it's like, man, that's what you've become. You are what your contact list looks like in your phone. And I'm looking at my phone and I'm like, man, damn it, what happened to you? But I'm so far gone in the dope world and I can't pull myself out of it. Nothing is going to pull me out of that if it takes me doing it, because I don't want to leave that. All I want to do is get high, Jeff.
That gentleman that introduced you to that in Wall Street, do you at all keep in contact? Do you ever know whatever happened to him?
I don't know whatever happened to him. I've never tried to look him up. I don't, honestly, I don't care. I don't hold it against him for doing
it. No, not that way. I mean, just to see if he had an opportunity to clean himself up too, and if he, where his life is at this point.
Yeah, no, I don't.
It's a chapter you closed.
It's a chapter I closed in the sense that it's almost like time thing. I don't go back and try to relive the past and kind of see what anybody from that world that I was in at the time, the drug world and all that, like my partner in crime, a guy named Dustin, the guy that went down first and then I went down next. And Dustin, I don't even know what Dustin's up to now. I've never tried to look Dustin up to see what he's doing. I mean, he may live down the road from me for all I know, but I just don't know what Dustin's doing. I don't look any of those people up. That's a past chapter of my life, and I'm moving forward now.
So when was what was the exact date when you got arrested?
July 30th, 2008. I mean, it's a day I'll never forget. I was sitting on this couch, this little rundown apartment in Dallas, and I'm sitting there smoking meth with my meth dealer, and I'm telling this guy, his name is Tex. I'm like, Tex, man, the end is near. Dustin had just been picked up 10 days before that. And then a flash from every day comes through the window, blows up in my face. SWAT team comes in. And July 30th, 2008, I tell people all the time, it wasn't just a day I was arrested. Man, that was a day I was rescued. Man, I got pulled out of a situation I could not get myself out of. It was a day that I got sober. I was taken into sobriety at gunpoint with automatic weapons drawn on me. And it was the day of a new life. But I didn't see it like that at the time, Jeff, I assure you.
How many – let's go through – I know you probably have a ton of stories incarcerated. Give me a couple of stories that how the inside truly is when you're in there and how it changed you, or if it did change you as a man.
So there was a guy in Dallas County Jail, this older black guy named Mr. Jackson, that told me the story about the coffee bean. I got a life sentence, Jeff, for the things that I get. A jury gave me 65 years in prison for organized crime, a 6-day trial. And at the end of the 6 days of trial, they went to deliberate for 10 minutes of my sentence. 10 minutes is nothing, man. I don't know how much Law and Order you watch, but if a jury's gone for 10 minutes, they smoked you.
Yeah.
And I'm back in my pod in Dallas County Jail waiting to be shipped off to prison, and everybody's telling me how to get into a gang. You can't survive without a gang. And so there was this one guy, though, Mr. Jackson, that shares with me the story of the coffee bean. And he takes prison as a pot of boiling water. And he said, you know, we're going to put three things in the pot of boiling water, a carrot, an egg, and a coffee bean. And he goes through the progression. The carrot turns soft and mushy and sad and weak in a pot of warm water. He said, that happens to people in prison. You don't want to be the carrot, though. And he said, the egg will turn hard in a pot of warm water. And it's when people that go into prison, they become angry and bitter and just disassociated with everybody else. And he said, that's the natural progression of a human being in that environment, is to become the egg. But the coffee bean, he said, changes the water to coffee. He said, because the power was inside the coffee bean. And he tells me, just like the power is inside you. So he's telling me, if you're going to survive prison and not get into a gang and not become part of the institution, you have to be like the coffee bean and change the institution around you, change the water. And he told me, though, it's not going to be easy. He said, when you get to prison, the white gangs are coming after you first. You have to fight them all. The Aryan Brotherhood, the Aryan Circle, the White Knights, the Woods. Then it's going to be the black gangs, the Crips, the Bloods, the Gangster Disciples, Mandingo Warriors. He said, you have to fight them all. But he said, if you survive all that, and you can't survive all that, you will have the right to walk alone. And he told me something that day, Jeff, that's something I remind myself of all the time, is that you don't have to win all your fights, but you do have to fight all your fights. And this is something I learned, look, physically in prison, and I went to prison and I got my butt kicked all over that place. I probably got 3 dozen fights and I lost 75% of those fights. But I won because I kept showing up. You couldn't keep me down. And if you challenged me, I'd go out there and do it. And that's what life is. You know, life some days, you're going to wake up and you know, hey, life's about to kick my butt today, but you've got to go. You've got to show up every day in life. You know, it's literally and figuratively, you have to fight all your fights. And it took me 2 weeks to get to the white gangs. Then I'm fighting the black gangs. Then I ended up on the basketball court in the rec yard of the life sentence building, the most segregated place in prison, because everything in prison was about race. That's what Jackson told me it would be. So I end up on the basketball court where no white guys are allowed in the basketball court. And I get myself in a basketball game one Monday morning, Jeff, and I got to play basketball every day after that. For the next 6 days, I'm playing the most brutal basketball, hockey, and football combined. But after 6 days of that basketball, man, these guys, the black guys on the court said, hey, man, you're good. You don't have to worry about the blacks the rest of your time you're in prison. And that was really a chance to come up for air. And it's like, okay, hey, maybe this is going to be okay. And it lasted about 2 weeks, you know, that I didn't have to worry about fighting again. But I got the biggest fight I ever got into in prison was about 2 months into it. The last fight I had to fight, and I found out this guy was going to come try to rape me in the shower. And the guy that told me about it actually wanted me to kill this guy. He was like the biggest rapist in prison. And he said, you've got an opportunity to basically kill this guy and catch him off guard. And he gave me a fan motor to kill this guy with. And so I went to the shower with this fan motor in this bag to swing it around, kind of like a ball and chain flail. And I got the upper hand of this dude real quick. He didn't see it coming. You know, I got him on the ground. I'm beating with him. And I'm about to smash this guy's brains in with this fan motor. And two of his gang brothers stopped me. They're like, man, look, if you kill this guy, we got to kill you, because you can't beat a man while he's down on the ground like that in prison. The only rule in prison about fighting, Jeff, is that if a guy's on the ground, you can't continue to hit him. You got to stop fighting and let him get back up. So these guys let me make it that day. They stopped me from killing this other guy. And that was the last time I ever had to fight in prison, because I had proved myself. And once I did that, Jeff, I finally had to start working on myself and becoming that coffee bean inside that prison. And it's the hardest thing in the world, because prison is the most negative place in the world. I had a cellmate who was trying to help me with my mindset. He said, you got to change the way you work at prison to become that coffee bean. He said, you have to stop looking at prison as a punishment, start looking at prison as an opportunity. He gave me a riddle that day, Jeff. This guy named Carlos gave me that riddle. He said, three frogs are sitting on a log. One of the frogs makes the decision to jump. He said, how many frogs are left in the log? And I said, two. Carlos, there's two. He said, wrong. All three frogs are still sitting in the log, because the frog that made the decision to jump never took the action to jump. And he said, that's what you're missing in life right now. You're missing that action step, because you've got this decision. You want to be a coffee bean, but you don't know how to take action. And he said, if you don't take action, you'll never do what you want to do. And he said, if you stop looking at prison as a punishment and start looking at this as your opportunity to work on yourself 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and become the best version of Damon West possible, the best coffee bean that you could be, he said, then you will turn your life around and become that coffee bean. And that's what I had to do, right? I had to change my mindset. And that's what we have to do in life. Change the way we see the outcome. Change the way we see the problem.
That's such a powerful little metaphor with the frog. I mean, that's crazy. Something simple like that, it is very powerful. So what was your next steps? Let's speed through this, because there's other things I want to talk to you about, but what was your next steps in prison? Educating yourself, reading, what were your steps to become essentially the coffee bean?
So, you know, there's five things, man. I tell people all the time, the first rule about being a coffee bean is having a positive body language, because your body language is powerful, man. Your smile, people read your body language. You smile, people smile back, man. I disarmed entire rooms in there by just having a smile. And the smile says, hey, man, you're not going to break me. You can't break me. Life's going to be hard, but I get that, man. And your smile changes everything. So the first rule about being a coffee bean was having positive body language. The second rule was about working out on myself every day in three areas, spiritually, mentally, and physically. You know, that's really saying, hey, look, you know, I'm going to become a complete person. I was locked up with guys, Jeff, where they could play in the NBA or the NFL. These guys were massive physical people. They worked out on their bodies all day long. They didn't work out on their minds. They worked out on their soul. You want to be a complete person? You want to be a coffee bean? Yeah. You got to work all three of them out. The third rule about being a coffee bean was, you know, the secret to life. And I tell people all the time, the secret to life is servant leadership. Servant leadership is when we're helping other people achieve their goals, helping to raise others up to a different station of life. Because when we're helping other people, well, that's when we're at our best. And that's what we're really all called to do anyway. The fourth rule about being a coffee bean was understanding that I only really control four things in life. I alluded to this earlier. The four things I control, the same four things you control, are all between my ears, or between your ears too. You control what you think, what you say, what you feel, and most importantly, everybody's going to see what you do, your actions. Those are the four things you control. And outside of that, you just don't control it. And the fifth rule about being a coffee bean, something I reminded myself of all the time, is that Your past doesn't define you. Jeff, if my past defined me, you wouldn't be sitting on this call, this Zoom right now, this podcast with a guy that, you know, a former felon from a Texas prison. But it's because our past is our lesson. The present today is a gift and the future is your motivation. You got to find the right stuff to motivate yourself with. We talked about that earlier. Motivate yourself with things that are of this, you know, things that you can become whole with, things that are not of this world.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, those are all five things that I essentially hold close to me. And something simple like a smile, Damon, it's something even my children, I can't even remember how many times we'll be in a mall and I'll be like, somebody walks by, like smile at them. And it's so powerful when you just walk down the street and smile at somebody and get there, and their instant reaction, most people are like, they're shocked and then they'll smile back because they're not used to that. And it's such a powerful little tool. And I feel like you guys are so lucky in Texas not dealing with, we're stuck, we're wearing masks everywhere. And I think it's something that's pulling away from our identity and being human, right? So I think it's something simple like a smile is such a powerful, powerful thing. So I appreciate that very much. When was the date you got out of prison? And let's talk about
November 16th, 2015.
Yeah, do you have all these days in tattooed on yourself? Powerful dates in your head, right?
Yeah, they're big dates. I mean, these dates is, you know, like I said, your life's going to be made up of these days called fork in the road days. These are fork in the road, man. These are days that your life changed. You know, November 16th, 2015, I walk out of prison. Not necessarily a completely free man because I'm on parole for the rest of my life, which means I have a parole officer. I check in every month. I pee in a cup. I pay a fine. I'll do that until 2073. That's when I get off parole, 2073. I'm on supervised release until then. But, you know, I walked out of prison with another opportunity at life. And this is the time thing we talked about. I lost all that time and it couldn't be replaced. But what am I going to do going forward, man? And I have not slowed down since. But I've allowed myself to be a more complete human being because I have a program of recovery today. The program of recovery is so important for an addict because every addict that has an addiction needs a program of recovery because a program of recovery gives you tools to live a normal life with. And today, because I have a program of recovery, because I can work a self-inventory, Jeff, I can look at myself and say, hey, where was I wrong that I owe people an apology? Was I a good person today? You know, what did I do to put back in the stream of life? And hey, by the way, do I need to forgive somebody? Because here's the deal. One of the things in life that really haunts us and holds us back is resentments. When you have a resentment inside of you, man, you're carrying something around that's so poisonous and toxic, it eats you up from the inside out. And the opposite of resentment is forgiveness. And if I can find a way every single day, at the end of the day, when I'm doing a personal inventory, because my recovery program teaches me that I have to do a personal inventory every day, that means I won't take that baggage with me to the next day.
Yeah.
If I have a resentment against somebody, I'm laying in bed at night, I'm talking to my higher power, I'm letting it go. I'm not taking that with me the next day because that's poison. A resentment is like drinking poison, hoping the other person dies. But my program of recovery has allowed me to do things like be in a relationship. Because a relationship is not just about me. It's about another person. And in my life, being an addict, addiction is a very selfish thing. I've been a very selfish person all my life. And it wasn't until in my 40s when I got out of prison that I was finally able to have a mature adult relationship. And now, you know, now I'm a husband. I'm a stepfather. You know, I have these roles that I play in life that are important to me. But as I told you before, I don't identify myself with being, you know, solely a husband or solely a stepfather, because these are things that can be taken away from you, man. I identify myself with being a servant leader. You know, I tell people all the time, there's three things that I really put forward in my identity. It's my faith, my ability to serve other people, and the relationships I've built along the way, you know, because that's kind of stuff that can build me into being a better person because I'm living for the opportunity to serve other people. That's really what it's about.
If you were to describe the meaning of your wife now, what does she mean to you?
My wife. My wife. Oh, she's half of me. I mean, she's literally like, it's like meeting your soulmate, meeting someone that completes you.
Where did you guys meet?
We met through a friend. A friend of ours introduced us to each other. You know, it's one of those deals. Dating for me wasn't a lot of fun coming out of prison. You know, guys get out of prison, the first thing they want to do is find a girl they want to hook up. And look, man, I get it, man. I was locked up for almost a decade. I get it. Yeah. But I'm on parole the rest of my life. And I've got this idea that I want to be this coffee bean. I want to go out and impact people in a positive way. I've got to be very selective in the dating process. I can't just jump into a relationship with someone without getting to know them. Because look, here's the deal. Here's the reality. A guy's on parole the rest of his life. You get into a relationship with a woman that says, hey, you it's not working out. You want to break up. She says, hey, if you break up with me, I'm going to call the cops. Man, that's not just a bad day. That changes your entire life. You can't have the cops called.
No, yeah, of course. So
I didn't spend a lot of time dating. And it was just a chance encounter. And a friend introduced us to each other. And we kind of slowly walked into this, to the relationship. And, you know, I go talk in prisons all over America.
Yeah.
And there's always a man or woman in the crowd when I'm done. Because I go to men's and women's prisons. Then I'll point to my wedding ring. When I get done, they're like, hey, all the amazing things you've got to do, Damon. How did you do that? How did you find someone that would love you after all the things you did wrong? Because that's what they want to. That's what we all want to do as human beings. Human beings have this inherent need to want to belong and be loved. That's what we are at the core of being human. Humans don't want to hate each other because of color and all this other stuff that you see on TV that divides people. People don't want to do that. They get into that because of fear. Fear makes you see things that aren't real. But that's what these inmates want to know. How did you do that? How did you find someone that would love you again? And you know, that was the thing that when I got out of prison, I had this fear that I would never find a relationship like that. Who's going to want me after all the things I've done wrong and all the baggage that I carry around? But I did find that person, or that person found me. And you know, the way the universe works,
it's, I was going to say, you weren't looking for it. That's what makes it so magical, right?
Right, right. I mean, so I found it. I found a family. Her family loves me. They've taken me in. There's all these fears that I had in my head about what the reality was going to be never came to fruition because I stopped trying to control the situation. That stuff that is outside of our control, we can't try to control that. It has to happen around you.
When did you start the mindset of, obviously, you're on your third book or your fourth book now?
Just finished the third book and getting ready to write the fourth book.
Yeah, I remember we talking about this prior. So when did you write your first book and when did you feel your story needed to be told on that level?
Wrote my first book, The Change Agent. It came out in March of 2019, but really I started writing when I was in prison. It was a prison.
So diary. You did. I was going to ask you that. So you did do that, huh?
Yeah, it was a diary I kept in prison. A buddy of mine was like, hey, man, I got out of prison. A real good friend of mine named Jeff was like, hey, man, you still got that diary you kept? I was like, yeah. So he's like, hey, send me some of that diary. I'd like to read it. So I sent it to him. He gave it to, he was living in Manhattan. He sent it to a friend of his that was a literary agent. The literary agent gets in touch with me and says, hey, where's the rest of this book? And I'm like, man, if it's a book, the best chapters haven't been written yet. Give me some time to live some life and write better chapters. And I did. And once I got to a point in life where I felt like the book was ready to be submitted, we submitted the manuscript and it got published by a division of Simon & Schuster, and that was it. And I've never considered myself to be a writer, but The Change Agent is one of those, I mean, people get in touch with me all over the world, Jeff. They're like, man, I got a hold of your book. And it's just one of those books that's like, wow. But yeah, that was the first book I ever wrote, The Change Agent.
And when is your third book? When are you hoping for it to be released?
I got The Change Agent done. The Coffee Bean.
Was
later on that year, in 2019. And it's still a bestseller, The Coffee Bean with John Gordon. And John and I did The Coffee Bean for Kids. And right now we're working on a book called How to Be a Coffee Bean. Just all these different ways, like a prescriptive type book. Because people get in touch with me all the time. Like, hey, man, I love this allegory. The care of the egg and the coffee bean, but man, how do I do that? How do I apply that? So let me put it in a book for you, show you how you apply it. Maybe another year.
I see the coffee bean for the kids behind you. Where was the mindset starting that?
During the pandemic, John and I were like, look, man, this is bad. The kids are at home. We needed some way for them to understand what was going on, that pot of boiling water that they're in. And so we came up with The Coffee Bean for Kids. And in the book, The Coffee Bean for Kids, it was really a chance to write a book and do it in the way that we saw America. So the kids in the book, there's a little black girl in the book. There's a little girl from India in the book. There's a little Hispanic boy in the book. There's a kid that's Asian in the book. I mean, there's a kid that's in a wheelchair in the book. A student with special needs, an autistic boy is in the book. So you've got all these, it's just like it's a giant melting pot in this book of all these kids. Because we wanted every kid to see themselves inside this book. So it was really a fun project.
How long, when did you guys start that? Because obviously there was a pandemic. So it was started and released pretty quickly, I'm assuming.
It's started it in like April, and it was done a few months later. I mean, worked with an illustrator.
Yeah.
And it was released in December. So it was really tight. Okay. No, a time frame on a book, it takes about 18 months to get a book done from when you submit the manuscript to when it goes into print. So 18 months is about the normal time frame from a book. But John Gordon, John's got this method of writing books and getting them out. He cranks them out quick, man. He is just dynamic as a person.
Where did you meet John Gordon?
Through a guy named Dabo Swinney, the head coach at Clemson University. I spoke to Dabo's football team in 2017, and then John was there speaking to the team in 2018. He called me up out of the blue, and I was shocked. I've got this huge motivational speaker and author on the other end of my phone, and he's like, "Hey, look, Dabo was telling me about you and the coffee bean story." He said they got shirts. These are shirts from Clemson. Yeah, coffee bean. He said, "Let's write a book." He said, 2018, Jeff, he said, "The world needs the coffee bean message. Let's deliver this message to the world." So we did. We wrote the book, and it's become a bestseller. It's in language. It's in French. It's in German. It's in Spanish. It's in Chinese. It's in Arabic. It's in Korean. It's in Vietnamese. It's in all these languages all over the world.
So powerful, huh?
Yeah, I was in Mexico last week with my wife. We finally took our honeymoon that we never took, because we're always like, "Well, we'll take it 2020. Didn't happen.
Yeah.
So we were in Mexico last week. I did a book signing while I was in Cancun. I mean, I have the Spanish version of coffee bean. And while I was there, I did a book signing. I mean, so it was really neat. It's really neat to have this message in many different languages. If I could ever come to Canada, I would do one with a French copy. So, but I can't go to Canada. Felons can't go to Canada from the United States.
So let's talk a bit about your role as a dad. What does that mean to you now?
Yeah. And I get this specifically because I'm a stepfather. I'm Clara's stepfather because when I met Kendall and she told me about her daughter, first of all, I didn't get to meet Clara for like 6 months. You know, she's not going to bring some guy around that may not be a potential person to stay. But when she told me I was getting ready to meet Clara, my stepdaughter, she said, "Listen, Clara has a great father. It just didn't work out in their relationship that they stayed married." But she said, "Clara has a wonderful father, a great father, and she has a great relationship with him. You don't have to try to be Clara's dad." She said, "Be Clara's friend, be a role model for her, make her a priority to you, and everything will be great with Clara and you. You'll have a great relationship." And that's what I've done from the very beginning. And I told Clara, whenever I married her mom, there's a video of it on YouTube where Clara's at the altar with her mom. And I tell her, "Look, you know, you have a wonderful father, and I'll never, you know, I don't need to be your father, but I'll always be your friend and your role model and your mentor. And I'll always be there for you." And that's the basis of our relationship. Clara and I have a wonderful relationship. I mean, she is my little buddy.
How old is she?
She's 9 years old. She's actually one of the characters in the Coffee Bean for Kids. She's the main character. You know, you always see these books where the main character is the boy. I think the main character my stepdaughter. So
I love it. So when you mentioned the gentleman, the coach, that it was that the coach that opened up your doors for public speaking.
Yeah, Dabo Swinney.
That was his name. Yeah. When did you know him from the past, or was this something you connected after you got out?
It's a crazy story, man. It was January of 2017.
I love your dates. This is awesome.
Yeah, January of 2017, and I go to this award show in Houston. I live 90 miles from Houston, and I meet all these college football coaches at the award show that night. And of the 8 coaches there, 7 of them had already told me no. And I'm like, man, the last coach is going to tell me no too. But it's that competitive mindset. It's like, you know what? I'm going to make you tell me no to my face. I'm going to go home. So I met Dabo Swinney at the award show. The conversation felt like a big no. But I went home that night, and I slept like a baby because I left it all on the field, and I asked all 8 coaches if I could talk to their team, and all 8 of them told me no. But 4 months later, I got an email from, you know, his director of football operations at Clemson. And he said, "Hey, Coach Swinney said he mentioned your award show in Houston. Would love to have you come talk to the team. You have August 1st open." I'm like, dude, I got every first open. I got nothing going on in my life. And that one yes and that room full of no's that night, Jeff, that one yes changed my life. Because after that presentation to Clemson in August 1st of 2017, man, when I spoke to Dabo's football team for the first time, Dabo got on the phone. He called Nick Saban. He called all these coaches in American college football. And all these coaches are calling me now and said, "Hey, Dabo said I got to bring you in to speak to my team. So he kicked open the door to college football, which kicked open all kinds of other doors. But he also introduced me to John Gordon, who brought me into his world as a keynote speaker and author, and just shot me into a different orbit. I mean, that one yes in that room. I tell entrepreneurs, I tell salespeople, I tell athletes all the time, you got to put in every rep, and you got to make every call. You got to knock on every door, because you never know where your Dabo Sweeney moment's going to be. You never know where you're going to meet that one client that opens up their whole Rolodex to you, you know, that one client that changes your life. And that's what Dabo was to me.
That's amazing. Yeah. It's so powerful and so true, right? I mean, it just takes that one yes, or that one moment of just bumping into the right person, and everything else changes. And look how well you're doing right now. So congratulations on all that. This has been a great, great conversation. I always end off with two little simple questions. One, if you had a superpower, what would it be?
Oh, to be able to listen. I think that people in life want to be heard. That's one of the most fundamental keys to communication. People want to feel like they've been heard. And if you feel like you've been heard, no matter what the outcome is, you'll walk away from it feeling okay. If you even go, you know, say you've got a boss, you go in the office, you tell your boss what you feel about something, the boss says, hey, I've heard everything you said, and I've taken it in, but I can't do that. You still walk away feeling like you've been heard. So if I had a superpower, it would be able to listen completely and listen without any bias, or just listen completely to what's being said.
Very interesting. If something were to happen to you today, in a few words, how would you want to be remembered or described by your loved ones?
Servant leader.
Servant leader.
Useful. I just want to be useful, Jeff. And it's the same question the lady from parole asked me whenever I'm being interviewed by parole for the first time in the life sentence. She said, if you could be remembered for being anything in life, she said, give it to me in one word, go. And I'm a coffee bean. And it's the easiest question for a coffee bean to answer, because my answer to her was useful. I just want to be useful. And I can be useful anywhere I am, in a prison, out of a prison, anywhere, because I am a servant leader. And that's how I want to be remembered, as being a servant leader.
That is awesome. Where can our audience get a hold of you? If they want to get a hold of you, get them on your show, or just to follow you or pick up your books or anything like that. Where do you have a website? Do you have social media links?
Twitter and Instagram at DamonWest7, DamonWest7. My website is DamonWest.org. And either one of those places you can find me. Damon@DamonWest.org is my email. So hit me up.
I appreciate it, brother. Thank you for taking your time and doing this, man, today.
Hey, man, thanks a lot. All my books are available on Amazon. If you've got Amazon in your country, you can get it too. So I know you do. So
awesome, brother. Thank you. Nice.
Appreciate you.
That's a wrap for today. I want to thank our guest, Damon West, for taking time out of his busy schedule to be a guest on the Jeff Knows Inc. podcast. Incredible story, incredible journey. If you guys enjoy this podcast as much as I have, please spread the word. Tell your friends, tell your family. Leave a review. 5 stars will be absolutely amazing. We love spending time reading the reviews. Until next week, guys, keep moving forward.